Nigel Anthony reads from our book of the week, The Zhivago Affair by Peter Finn and Petra Cuvée. The Soviet authorities have forced Boris Pasternak to send a telegram to his Italian publishers forbidding publication of his novel Dr. Zhivago. Knowing this is coercion, the publishers release it anyway to rave reviews. In America, the CIA is attempting to smuggle original language copies back into Russia.
Visitors to the Soviet Pavilion at the 1958 Brussels Universal and International Exposition first had to climb several flights of steps, as if approaching a great museum. At the rear of the great central hall stood a 50-foot-tall bronze statue of Lenin, watching over Sputnik satellites, rows of agricultural machinery, models of Soviet jetliners, coal mines, and exhibits on the collective farm. Soviet brawn was also accompanied by a more seductive array of cultural offerings, from the Bolshoi Ballet to the Moscow Circus. The Soviets were going all out to awe and woo. The United States Pavilion was a celebration of American consumerism and entertainment. Copies of Dr. Zhivago could clearly not be handed out at the American Pavilion, but the CIA had an ally nearby. The Vatican Pavilion was called the City of God. It was crowned by a gleaming white belfry, and inside there was a church, with displays on the papacy. Irina Poznova, the founder of Life with God, a Brussels-based organisation that smuggled religious books into the Soviet Union, set up a small library and handed out religious literature. There was a steady stream of Soviet visitors to the Vatican Pavilion, drawn in part by the presence of Rodin's sculpture, The Thinker, which had been loaned by the Louvre for the duration of the fair. In early September, copies of Dr. Zhivago in Russian were handed out. Soon the book's blue linen covers were found littering the fairgrounds. People were ripping off the cover, dividing the pages, and stuffing them in their pockets to make the book easier to hide. The CIA was quite pleased with itself. "This phase can be considered completed successfully," read a memo dated the 9th of September. There was only one problem. The Dutch publishing firm, Mouton, had never signed a contract with Feltrinelli. The Russian edition, printed in The Hague, was illegal. Feltrinelli was furious. For the CIA, the contretemps generated unwelcome publicity. Mouton eventually apologised, taking out advertisements in the New York Times, Corriere della Sera, The Times, and Le Figaro, among others, to say that only owing to a deplorable misunderstanding had Mouton published Dr. Zhivago in Russian. On November the 15th, 1958, the CIA was first linked by name to the printing by the National Review Bulletin. A writer using the pseudonym Quincy observed with approval that copies of Dr. Zhivago were shipped to the Vatican Pavilion in Brussels. That quaint workshop of amateur subversion, the Central Intelligence Agency, from time to time produces some noteworthy goodies. In Moscow, these books were passed from hand to hand as avidly as a copy of Fanny Hill in a college dormitory. Copies of the novel were soon selling on the black market in Russia for 200 or 300 rubles, almost a week's wages for a labourer. On October 22nd, 1958, Max Frankel, Moscow correspondent for the New York Times, rushed out to Perodielkino to speak to Pasternak after the newspaper learned that the author of Dr. Zhivago seemed certain to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. Pasternak's anticipation of the honour was tinged with some trepidation. He wrote to his sister Lydia in Oxford, "If, as some people think, I'm awarded the Nobel Prize in spite of Soviet protests, then I'll probably be subjected to every kind of pressure here to refuse it. I think I have enough resolution to resist." The publication of Dr. Zhivago had immediately generated headlines in Europe and the United States. The Western press focused on what they saw as its anti-communist flavour and the efforts to suppress it by the Kremlin. The year 1958 had begun badly for Pasternak. In late January, he developed a blockage in his bladder. His family was unable to get him the proper treatment because the previous year the Writers' Union had decreed that he was unworthy of a bed in the Kremlin hospital. Pasternak's neighbour, Kornei Chukovsky, visited him and was infuriated that nobodies and lickspittles, as he called them, scorned by one and all, could command luxurious treatment at the drop of a hat, while Pasternak lay there lacking the most basic care. Chukovsky pleaded with the authorities to have him hospitalised. A bed was eventually found in the Central Committee Clinic. Pasternak spent a couple of months convalescing. He was unable to work with any consistency and spent much of his time answering the admiring letters that began to arrive. Excitement about the novel continued to build abroad as translations into other languages neared completion. In February 1958, Kurt Wolff, the head of Pantheon Books, which was planning to publish Dr. Zhivago in the United States, wrote to Pasternak, "It is the most important novel I have had the pleasure and honour of publishing in a long professional career," wrote Wolff. "It would be nice to chat about all this and more. Perhaps there will be an opportunity in Stockholm towards the end of 1958. Pasternak replied, "What you write about Stockholm will never take place, since my government will never give permission for me to accept any kind of award." The French edition of Dr. Zhivago was published in June. When Pasternak saw a copy of it, he burst into tears. The publication of Dr. Zhivago in France, the remarkable personal letters, dizzying and breathtaking, which I have received from there, this is a special kind of experience which creates a feeling of being in love. Dr. Zhivago was published in Britain and the United States in September. Publication in Germany followed in early October. The Nobel Academy shortlisted three candidates for consideration for the Literature Prize: Pasternak, Alberto Moravia, and Karen Blixen. Pen name, Isak Dinesen, the Danish author who wrote Out of Africa in 1937. The campaign to vilify Pasternak began to take shape. Pravda should run a satirical article denouncing the novel and unveiling the true intentions of the bourgeois press's hostile campaign around the awarding of the Nobel Prize to Pasternak. A group of prominent Soviet writers should issue a joint statement that the award was an effort to ignite the Cold War. Finally, Pasternak should be told to refuse the Nobel, since the award does not serve the interests of our motherland. The vote for Pasternak was unanimous. But in a nod to political sensitivities in Moscow, the citation that was agreed did not mention Dr. Zhivago. The final wording naming Pasternak said, "For his notable achievement in both contemporary poetry and the field of the great Russian narrative tradition." The first official Soviet reaction was muted and condescending. Nikolai Mikhailov, the Soviet Minister of Culture, said he was surprised by the award. "I know Pasternak as a true poet and excellent translator, but why should he get the prize now, dozens of years after his best poems were published?" He told a Swedish correspondent in Moscow that it would be up to the Writers' Union to decide if Pasternak would be allowed to receive the prize. The Central Committee decided that the novelist Konstantin Fyedin, Pasternak's neighbour, had some influence with him, and he should relay the Kremlin's decision that he must refuse the Nobel Prize. Pasternak refused to agree to this instruction. Instead, he sent a telegram to the Swedish Academy, "Immensely grateful, touched, proud, astonished, abashed. Pasternak." The Kremlin regarded the reaction in the West to the award as entirely predictable. In the American and European press, Pasternak was celebrated as a nonconformist facing down an oppressive system. In an official response, the Soviet Ministry of Foreign Affairs accused the Academy of wanting to intensify the Cold War and international tension. The full fury of the authorities was about to be unleashed, but in Pasternak's home, the celebration continued as friends came to toast him. On Saturday morning, Muscovites snapped up copies of Literaturnaya Gazeta as word spread in the city about an extraordinary attack on Pasternak. The newspaper printed in full the 1956 rejection letter of Dr. Zhivago, written by the editors of Novi Mir, the literary magazine. For ordinary readers, many of whom were learning about Dr. Zhivago and the Nobel Prize for the first time, it was a feast of delicious detail about the novel's sins. By 6 a.m, people were lining up to buy copies, and the newspaper sold out in hours. The editorial read, "The internal emigrant Zhivago, faint-hearted and base in his small-mindedness, is alien to the Soviet people, as is the malicious literary snob Pasternak. He is their opponent. He is the ally of those who hate our country and our system." 45 writers, who were also members of the Communist Party, held a meeting about Pasternak. There was general agreement that he should be expelled from the Union of Soviet Writers, the ultimate sanction, as it would deprive him of the ability to earn a living and could also threaten his state-provided housing. A number of writers went further and said Pasternak should be expelled from the Soviet Union. A formal decision was put on the agenda for a meeting of the Union's executive on Monday. The state's giant propaganda machine was now working at full tilt. Pasternak tried to laugh some of it off, but it was, in fact, all very painful to him. The scale of the rhetorical assault and the global attention it drew was unprecedented. The meeting of the executive of the Writers' Union was scheduled for noon on Monday. Pasternak, who was feeling ill, sent a letter to the meeting. "I still believe, even after all this noise and all those articles in the press, that it was possible to write Dr. Zhivago as a Soviet citizen. I don't think I disparage the dignity of Soviet writers in any way. I thought that my joy and the cheerful feelings I had when the Nobel Prize was awarded to me would be shared by the society I have always believed I am a part of." The vote to expel Pasternak from the Writers' Union was unanimous, according to the official record. Pasternak and Ivinskaya were now being followed by the KGB. She recalled, "We spoke mostly in whispers, frightened of our own shadows, and constantly glancing sideways at the walls. Even they seemed hostile to us." Pasternak took solace in small gestures of kindness, like the postman, who greeted him as always, despite the secret policeman parked nearby. Pasternak's mood darkened, however, and soon he sent a second telegram to Stockholm. "Considering the meaning this award has been given in the society to which I belong, I must reject this undeserved prize. Please do not receive my voluntary rejection with displeasure. Pasternak." The Swedish Academy responded that it has received your refusal with deep regret, sympathy and respect. Pasternak sent a telegram to the Central Committee informing the Kremlin of his decision and asking the authorities to allow Ivinskaya, who had been blackballed by official publishers, to work again. The strain was beginning to show. Pasternak's son, Yevgeny, was shocked when he saw his father soon afterwards. Pasternak was grey and dishevelled. "My father was unrecognisable."
Episode 4 of The Zhivago Affair by Peter Finn and Petra Couvet was read by Nigel Anthony, abridged by Libby Sparrier, and produced by Joanna Green. It's a peer production for BBC Radio 4. Among the guests on Woman's Hour after the news, the zoologist Lucy Cook describes how she managed to popularise the sloth. The film director Deborah Perkin talks about her latest project in Morocco, and Mimi A talks about Burmese cuisine and cooks the perfect pad thai stir-fried noodles. Jenny Murray presents Woman's Hour in a couple of minutes.
Don't miss a thing this summer with BBC Digital Radio.
We have Rugby Super League for you on BBC Radio 5 Live Sports Extra. The talking point today was that fabulous throw.
Back to a golden age of classic comedy on BBC Radio 4 Extra. And of course, it includes the famous line.
Up at Glastonbury with some very special moments in store. Stay with us for live music from across the weekend on BBC Radio 6 Music.
If you love radio, go digital. To find out more, search online for BBC Digital Radio.